In this episode of Fictional Hangover, we talk about a shirtless Russian honking the bosoms of a sassy badass in our discussion of Vampire Academy, Book 1 by Rochelle Mead.
If that doesn't sell a series, I don't know what will.
Everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series, authors, and voice actors that is full of spoilers. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire, and today we're going to discuss Vampire Academy by Rochelle Mead.
I'm so excited!
Standard disclaimer! If you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read or listened or watched the movie...
I do love the movie.
And don't want to be spoiled, stop listening to us and go read or listen to the book or watch the movie, then come back. If you haven't done this, we'll want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just like the show so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up.
Woohoo! I'm so excited! Woohoo! I'm ridiculously excited to do this. I'm just, yes!
I love it so much. So much.
I don't even want to procrastinate. I just want to dive right in. So just throw the background information at me and we'll get our initial thoughts and let's do this.
Yes, okay. Okay, so I would say we can just skip over the background info because, you know, I mean, whatever.
No.
But this background info came from Rochelle Mead's live journal. Which makes me laugh so much because Yag's live journal is from so long ago.
Next time, it's from MySpace.
Oh, gosh. And then Zanga.
Ooh. We're down with the kids. We know all the socials.
Yeah, we know all the socials from 20 years ago. Yikes. So, this
I wanna
is...
I want to cry, sorry.
I know. This is her post from her live journal on the day this book was released. Yep, it's official. Today is Vampire Academy's official release day. It's been creeping out here and there, but today's the day it'll technically be showing up in stores. So, if you've been itching to read about vampire princesses, their half-human bodyguards, and hot Russian badasses, the time is now.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah!
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Can you hear all the ticks in the boxes?
Yeah. It goes on to talk about Amazon and how she's pleasantly surprised that Vampire Academy was number 5 in an extremely specific set of books on Amazon. Books, children's books, literature, science fiction, fantasy, mystery, and horror, spine-chilling horror. This is not what I would call spine-chilling horror.
No. I think that would be very different now, actually.
Yeah, that's last week's episode.
Yeah.
Oh. So anyway, it's great.
I am delighted.
Especially because it's from LiveJournal, which means that I spent entirely too long on LiveJournal reading all of her books.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm surprised you're here for recording because that's a rabbit hole.
Oh my gosh, there was one post where she was talking about what would happen in Harry Potter if they could text, and that instead of Dumbledore dying, he went off and is on an island somewhere and he's texting Snape secret messages of what to do, and Voldemort's asking, like, oh, who are you texting, what are you doing, and he's like, oh no, you know, nothing's going on over here. And then Lucius Malfoy comes in from mowing the lawn and and talks about how Draco racked up 200 galleons worth of text messages, and so now they have a family plan. It was a terrible thing.
Oh my god, she's written that Harry Potter fanfic.
It's so good.
This is amazing.
It was a conversation between her and one of her friends, and they were just going back and forth, creating this terrible text scene.
I freaking love that.
Oh my gosh.
That's us every time we decide to do fanfic. We just throw it back at each other and it just evolves and turns into this its own little beast. That's amazing. Oh, no. I am all over that.
Well,
I hope there's a live journal entry for each of the books now.
Oh, there might be. I only went back to 2007. And and this was a July.
It's historical fiction.
It is. It really is. So this is July 2007 on Rochelle May's live journal. If you want to go and read that. Oh, her live journal is blue-succubus.livejournal.com. So everyone just go and check
that out. Just check it out. Let's bring live journal back. Let's take it back. That's amazing.
Oh my gosh.
I am absolutely over the moon with that.
Yeah. Oh man. So tell me your initial thoughts. You haven't read this one before.
No.
I've read it a million times, yes. Just like every other YA vampire book.
Yes.
So, okay. What do you think?
Okay. Well, let's contextualize.
Okay.
The reason I've never read it before is because I've never seen it in the bookshop. And you know what bookshops are like in the UK?
Yeah.
Hit and miss. Yeah. But it's been on my Audible wish list for years. The problem is, though, it's only ever been from Books 2 Plus because they've never had the license for Book 1 for years.
Yeah.
Like, I check it religiously. I was checking to see if they had it, and they never had it. And now they do.
And now you own it.
But now I own it. Which is good because I have listened to it twice in the last month. And in all caps, I'm so friggin' excited to finally read Vampire Academy. You have absolutely no idea. No idea. I have wanted to read this series in so long. And I'm finally getting the chance to do it. And now I'm getting a chance to talk about it and geek out. I am so happy. I'm so happy right now.
We're going to have to talk about the movie a little bit too.
Yes, I have rewatched that recently as well.
Yeah, me too. I just want to say.
And I love the movie as well. I will not have a bad word said about that tour de force.
Right. Sweet, sassy molassy. It's so good.
It is. It's underappreciated.
It's so good in the worst way.
Yes.
I think you're right about it being not in the right time. Although it had a Mean Girls vibe.
They've re-advertised it, actually. If you go on IMDb, they've re-advertised it as a Mean Girls, and that's because somebody from Mean Girls has been involved in it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like there were a couple of things that Rose said in the movie that I can just hear Tina Fey saying in real life. So, are you not impressed? Or something like that at the end.
She goes, are you not entertained? Because that's from Gladiator.
Yes.
Are you not entertained?
Yes, you're right.
Rose is just sassy.
Yeah. Yeah. Sweet, sassy molassy, she is.
She is. She is.
I love how after saying that, she comes back and is like, I'm sorry, I would never say that. I would never say sweet, sassy molassy unless I was possessed.
There's obviously something inside me.
Okay.
Awkward.
So should we start?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just see how seriously burnt my mouth there on my tea.
I'm sorry. You've got a little while to recuperate. This is a long paragraph.
Edit my pain out, please.
I will edit your pain out.
It's at the top of my mouth and my tongue. I'm in so much pain right now. I was going to go, but I can't because I put the lid on.
Maybe I'll leave your pain in. I kind of enjoy
it. Don't leave my pain in. The pain is just for Patreon. Right.
Rose is awoken in the middle of the night by a nightmare. But it's not her nightmare. She was dreaming of hot guys on the beach. It's her best friend, Lissa's. She could feel her fear coming through the psychic bond that they share. They don't know why they share it, but they do. And since Rose is going to be Lissa's guardian, it's come in handy. They've been on the run for 2 years and have managed to stay somewhat safe and hidden from the guardians of St. Vladimir's Academy. Until now. Minus that one time with the Psyhounds. But let's not talk about that. This is not a good time for them to be found. Rose just fed Lissa her blood because, oh yeah, Lissa is a Moroi, a vampire, and Rose is a Dampier, half human, half Moroi. Rose, in a I just got bit by a vampire and I liked it but we need to run fog, convinces Lissa to use compulsion on their human roommate to borrow his car so they can get away from the dozen or so guardians that want to take them back to school. They don't make it. A super tall, super hot guardian named Dimitri easily dispatches Rose when she tries to protect Lyssa from him, greets Lyssa, or Princess Vasilisa Dragomir, and takes them away from Portland and back to school in Montana.
It goes from womp womp to ooh.
Ooh. Ooh.
The plane ride is mostly uneventful, though Rose is drawn into Lyssa's mind, experiencing part of the flight as if she were in her body, sitting next to Dimitri.
Ooh.
She sees his Molinier marks, the tattoos on the back of his neck, marking him as a sworn guardian and showing how many Strigoi, evil undead vampires, he's killed. Inside her own head again, Dimitri comes to sit next to her to tell her that she's brave for fighting off all the guardians to keep Lyssa safe. Brave, but stupid. They arrive on campus and head past even more guardians and through the magical wards protecting the school and escorted to Headmistress Kirova's office. On the way, they pass by several students, including Lyssa's ex-boyfriend, Aaron, who still seems to be smitten with her, and a tiny, evil-looking girl who must be his new girlfriend. They also see many other novice guardians, more dampiers like Rose and Lyssa's dorky near-cousin, Natalie.
Inside the headmistress's office is Lyssa's near-uncle, Victor Dashkov, Natalie's dad. They're not really related to Lyssa, but they are all of royal families, so they act as if they are family. Victor has an illness that has aged and weakened him, so he'll never be made king. And Rose thinks that's sad because he's a pretty nice guy. Wrong! sorry.
Terrible Ooh. Cough you've got there. Johnson bad. Birdie tea.
Yeah, please. The headmistress threatens to send Rose away, but both Victor and Dimitri stand up for her and insist that she remain at school and begin her guardian training again. Dimitri reminds Headmistress Kirova that there aren't many female guardians and reveals that Rose and Lyssa share a psychic bond, something that the guardians and Moroi from the old stories used to share. It's a rare and remarkable thing, and to send Rose away would be a waste. Kirova allows her to remain, but insists that she train extra with Dimitri before and after class, in all her spare time, both as a punishment and to get her back on track with the rest of the novices. And we don't weep about that, friends. Because...
No, we're not upset.
Dimitri really. Is a hunk.
Her classes proved just how far behind Rose was in training. Missing 2 years of classes was a bad idea. She got the crap beat out of her during the physical lessons and was shamed and embarrassed during the educational courses. While she did keep Lyssa alive while they were away, one of her teachers made it clear that that was only because they were lucky and that no Strigoi found them. Strigoi are immortal undead vampires who drink the blood of Moroi to keep them strong. They also drink dampiers and humans, but Moroi are their main targets. They are extremely powerful and extremely dangerous.
Victor finds Rose on her way to lunch and asks her about the bond and the things she and Lyssa encountered while away from the school. She talks a little about when the bond started, shortly after the car accident that killed Lyssa's entire family. Rose probably shouldn't have survived either, but she did, and now she and Lyssa are closer than ever. Rose also mentions how, even though they didn't come across any Strigoi, they were tracked by Psyhounds, psychic wolf creatures sent by the school, and they managed to safely get away from them, which is no small feat. Victor seems really interested in this and their bond and vows to learn more. Dimitri also talks to Rose about their time away, suggests that he's proud of her for keeping Lyssa safe, but tells her unless she's serious about her training, she'll never be chosen to be Lyssa's guardian after graduation, bond or no bond.
Mm.
Ooh.
Rose and Lyssa meet up for lunch and go to the feeders before sitting down to eat in the cafeteria. Rose is jealous of Lyssa's human feeder, but that's so wrong.
Mm.
Sure, Moroi need blood to survive, but being a feeder is pretty pathetic. Feeders become addicted to being bitten, and Rose should definitely not want to be a feeder. Dampier women who did not become guardians often became blood whores and, well, You don't want to become a blood hog. In the cafeteria, the girls sit with Natalie, who asks a million questions about what happened while they were away, including one question they've been dreading. What did you do for blood, Lissa? Dang it. Shut up, Natalie. Rose immediately jumps up with a lie about finding willing humans because they definitely don't want anyone to know that she was feeding Lissa. It's just, it's too inappropriate.
And then you pointedly stare and turn your head to the side. It's not that big a deal.
No.
And it's like a fisheye lens right in Lissa's mouth. Rose and Lissa talk about their morning classes, and Rose learns that Lissa is behind two and has been put into a sophomore elemental training class. Maroi have slight control over the elements, earth, air, fire, and water, but will develop a stronger and more powerful connection to one of them as they age. Lissa has yet to specialize, though, which is kind of like not going through vampire puberty.
Ooh.
Being held back and not having gone through puberty is terrible.
No, it's bad. It's bad. The elemental basics teacher isn't worried, though. Lissa will specialize eventually. There's a brief moment here where the girls start to talk about mentioning something to the teacher, but then, no, they're definitely not going to talk about whatever that is.
They share most of their afternoon classes, then Rose decides they're going to break out again and run away. Lissa suggests they stay instead, and Rose is kind of excited, plus she really needs to train properly to keep Lissa safe. They go their separate ways, Rose off to extra training with Dimitri, and Lissa to a secret hiding space in the attic of the chapel. Rose slips inside of Lissa's mind and sees her interact with Christian Ozera, an outcast Morai whose parents willingly became Strigoi. Strigoi are not born, they are made. If a Strigoi bites a human, Dampier, or Morai, they will become Strigoi. If a Morai purposefully drains whomever they're drinking from, they will become a Strigoi. But becoming a Strigoi has its downsides. Sure, you're immortal! Great! But if you're Morai, you lose your elemental connection. Rose chastises Lissa about hanging out with Christian the next day, especially because she let it slip to him that Rose was her feeder while they're away.
Oh, man.
Lissa, if anyone found out about that, they'd be ruined socially.
Yikes.
Lissa, man.
Come on, dude. Rose talks to Jesse, a Moroi royal who is super hot, and some others about a crazy teacher they used to have, Miss Carp, who used to wander the campus at night. She's normal in every way. This reminds her of a time before she and Lissa left and she got caught sneaking out of her dorm. She fell from her second floor room and Miss Carp wandered by at that same time. She grabbed Rose's hands, scratched up from the fall, and healed them, then told her to go back inside because you never know who might be watching you. Weird. Both the healing and the paranoia. Both equally weird, I would say.
Ooh.
In church a few days later, Rose half hears something interesting the priest says. He's talking about Saint Vladimir and his heart being filled with so much Holy Spirit that he's able to use it to heal people. And he's so lucky to have his shadow-kissed guardian, Anna, who protects him and keeps him balanced. She's never heard the term shadow-kissed before, so she asks the priest about it after services. He gives her a book about Saint Vladimir that might help.
When she leaves the chapel, she meets back up with Lissa, who is talking to Aaron about a scandalous thing he's learned about. Two guardians left their Morai to marry each other.
Mm.
Ooh. That's not a thing that ever happens. Mm-mm. Guardians are supposed to put their Morai first. Plus, it's not like they can have children or anything. They're abandoning their duties. Then Mia, Aaron's tiny angry girlfriend, uses her water specialization to dump snow on Lissa, which almost causes Rose to punch her in the face. But she decides against it and goes back to her dorm, where she's met by her friend Mason. Mason is also a Dampier novice guardian, and he definitely has a huge crush on Rose. But as we just learned, Dampiers shouldn't get into relationships with each other. He is so friend-zoned.
Oh, he is. Bless him. He's so sweet, too.
Yeah. He helps her look through the book she has to find out about anything to do with shadow-kissed Anna, and she realises after reading that Anna and Vladimir had a bond like the one she shares with Lyssa. That's practically unheard of. She still doesn't know what shadow-kissed means, but at least she's learned something important. Yay, books!
Yay! You can learn things by reading books!
Who knew? There was a time before Google.
Oh my god. A few weeks pass and things are pretty much back to normal for Rose and Lyssa. Well, things are less exciting than they used to be, but they're relatively normal. Lyssa has been avoiding the popularity of the royals and hanging out with her nerdy cousin Natalie, and Rose is spending all her extra time training with Dimitri, though it feels less like punishment now. He goes for a run with her one day. She's upset that's been her only training to deal with Strigoi, to run away, but Dimitri maintains that it's the best thing for her to do. As they're wrapping up before classes start for the day, Rose is immediately pulled into Lyssa's head. She's freaking out, running, looking for Rose. Rose takes off to find her, Dimitri not far behind. Someone has put a dying fox on Lyssa's bed. That's awful. The girls quietly talk about something that happened before they left, something about a hurt raven, but no one knows about that, and that's definitely not what's happening now. It's just a sick joke. Dimitri takes Rose back to her dorm and asks her what she knows. He can tell there's something the girls aren't sharing, but Rose deflects, complaining that she needs to learn how to fight instead of just run away if people are going to play terrible jokes like this.
And we all know what happens to people who play terrible, terrible jokes. Ghosts come back.
And then there's a cliffhanger, and then they die.
Revenge.
And then they get CPR, and then there's a cliffhanger, and then they're sucked
more
up
death.
In a whirlwind tornado of ghosts.
And then a cliffhanger.
And then there's a cliffhanger. The end.
Classes are awful that day. Everyone is whispering about the dead fox. One kid, Ralph, comes up to Lyssa asking her if she killed the fox herself to convince the headmistress that she's crazy and needs to be sent away from school. Ralph, man.
Come on, Ralph. Don't be a douche.
Don't be a douche, Ralph. Don't be a douche. When Rose comes to her defense, Ralph changes tactics and decides that Rose did it for Lyssa as some sort of lesbian thing. He just gets worse.
Ralph is a douche.
Yeah.
He's a douchebag.
By the very definition.
He's a wiener bag.
But guess what?
What?
He erupts in flames.
Oh, I love it.
Christian, a fire user, also happens to be there, and he's laughing his head off as he's sent to the headmistress's office.
Good job, Christian.
Ralph is completely unhurt. No marks on him at all, but magic is never used offensively like that, and never ever on another person. Later, Rose chastises Lyssa because she's apparently still spending time with Christian. Lyssa says he's not so bad, and later on sneaks away from her dorm to meet up with him. Rose feels Lyssa's sneakiness and focuses on trying to get into her head. She's never been able to do it on purpose before, but she's determined to now. So she meditates and slips inside her mind.
Lyssa and Christian have a pretty flirtatious conversation about him setting Ralph on fire for her, even though she's adamant that using magic on people is wrong. He scoffs at that because he can tell she uses compulsion on literally everyone. Sure, all Moroi could use it on humans, but it's practically unheard of to be able to use it on other Moroi and Dampirs. And she does it a lot. They also talk about the fox and who could have done that, but they really don't know. Christian has an idea that Lyssa knows why it's being done. She deflects that thought with more flirting, and then Rose gets angry and leaves Lyssa's head. She has no idea why she got upset, but she did, and now she needs to do something or someone distracting. She finds Jesse and suggests they meet up in an unused lounge in the Dampier dorm. They start making out pretty intensely, and when his fangs graze her neck, she reacts. He asks her if she's done that before, blood drinking during a makeout session, and she denies it. But he realizes that she was the one feeding Lissa while they were away. Dun, dun, dun. It's pretty obvious, though. Come on. They start making out some more, and then Dimitri bursts into the room, throws Jesse out, and has a meaningful conversation with Rose about her perception and reputation, and how what she does reflects badly on Lissa and on him as her mentor. When she complains that she just wants to do what other girls do, he tells her she can't. The Moroi can have fun and do whatever they want, but she has to be a guardian and put them first. She doesn't want to disappoint Dimitri, so she vows to do better. Then he offers to teach her how to fight. And we all say, finally!
At last! In class the next day, Lissa and Rose are caught passing notes. The teacher reads the note aloud, and it's all about what Rose and Jesse got up to the night before and getting caught by Dimitri. She's not really embarrassed by it, though. After class, as she's walking across campus, she overhears people talking about a rumour she started about Mia's parents being janitors, which is excellent, because that means they're not talking about her or Lissa or the fox. It's so petty.
It is.
But then, the next group she passes is talking about the fox, which makes her think of the time briefly mentioned earlier with the raven. She and Lissa had snuck into the woods with a bottle of schnapps, but were found by Ms. Carp. As she's escorting them back to the school, they come across a raven and it's dying. Lissa crouches in front of the dead bird and Rose feels warmth and love inside her head. The bird flips over, looks carefully at Lissa, and flies away, perfectly healed. Ms. Carp freaks out and tells them never to speak of what just happened to anyone. She tells Rose to never let Lissa do it again. If they find out she can do that, they'll come for her. Rose snaps out of her memory when she runs into Mason, who has been trying to get her attention. He tried to find out about shadow-cased Anna, but couldn't find anything that they didn't already know, and suggests they need primary sources. Book reference!
I love Mason. You need primary sources, Rose. That's how you're going to find out your information. And she's like, what are you talking about?
It's
like,
we just... secondary or tertiary stuff.
We just literally talked about this in class. Were you paying attention? And she's like, no. I don't pay attention
in
class.
None of the secondary or tertiary nonsense.
No.
Let's go to the primary source.
The next day, Dimitri begins training Rose in hand-to-hand combat. She tries and horribly fails to attack him over and over and over and over.
Oh, Rose.
On their way out of the gym, she tries for a last sneak attack, but lets out an obvious battle cry, and he flips her over and pins her to the ground. Oh, and then we think briefly about the scene from the movie where she yells like a maniac and runs across the screen and tries to attack him, and he laughs and is like,
not subtle.
Stop yelling.
Shut up.
Really good job.
You're giving yourself away.
Really good job, but you don't need to yell because I totally knew you were going.
It's like fighting 101, isn't it? It don't is. Declare your intentions.
Oh, so good though. Okay, so let's see here. Dimitri flips her over and pins her to the ground and then stays there for just a little too long. Long enough for Rose to realize she has a huge crush on him.
Oh, snap. That's not going to be awkward at all.
No, it's fine. Later, the queen comes for a visit. At a banquet, Queen Tatiana greets Lissa and says she's happy she made it back to St. Vladimir's, but then completely trashes her in front of the entire school, saying that she has a very powerful name, but clearly she's not living up to it. Rose wants to kill the queen, but, you know, that's treason. So she goes to talk to Lissa about it and finds her talking to Natalie. Natalie is clearly trying to cheer Lissa up and is doing a good job, But she's also trying to find out why they ran away in the first place. Nope, can't tell anyone about that. So, Rose interrupts, and Natalie leaves. Then, Mia comes up and tries to start a fight, and realizes that Rose started the rumor about her parents, and vows revenge.
Revenge!
Revenge!
Dimitri comes up to them.
This is a very busy hallway.
It really is. Dimitri comes up to them to take Rose back to her dorm. Good timing, because she was about to punch Mia in the face. And she deserves it. On their way to the dorm, Christian passes by, and Rose decides she needs to stop him. She tells him that Lissa thinks he is a creepy stalker, but is too nice to say anything, so he needs to get a clue and leave her alone. Wow, Rose. It's really great. Really great of you to do that, Rose.
Later that night, Rose gets a bad feeling that something is wrong with Lissa. So she gets Dimitri and they go to her dorm. Lissa's in the bathroom and is covered in blood. Rose is very worried when she finds cuts on Lissa's arms. She used to cut herself a lot, but hasn't done it lately. But there's been a lot of rumours about her and the pressure has just built up and she has no other way to release it. There's an awful lot of blood though. Then Lissa reveals that there was a dead rabbit in her room and she tried to clean everything up before Natalie found out and told everyone about it. She brought it to the bathroom, tried to heal it but couldn't, then cut herself. It's not been a good night. She doesn't want anyone to know about the cutting or about the rabbit, but Dimitri comes in and takes her to the medical centre. Headmistress Kirova comes later, but Rose manages to get them to leave talking about the rabbit until the next day. And it is a horrible scene.
It is. Poor. It's terrible.
Poor Lissa.
I know. School is terrible the next day, but not because of the rabbit. Mia has started a rumor that Rose slept with Jesse and Ralph and let them drink her blood. So everyone at school thinks she's a blood whore now. These rumors, they're too much.
That's escalated a bit too far.
It really is. It really, really is. So,
and Ralph?
I know. Ugh. Ugh. And both of them? Like, is that at the same time? Because
that's what's implied in the movie.
Yeah.
It's not even implied in the movie. It's blatantly said in the movie.
Yeah.
Ugh. Not cool.
No. Not cool. So, Rose thought that Christian told Mia about the feeding while they were away, which spurred part of this rumor. So she confronted him about it. But no, even though she yelled at him about Lissa, it wasn't him. Things between Lissa and Christian are still confused, but Rose is so overwhelmed with rage for the two boys and then Mia later that she breaks down in her room and cries about it. Which is not normally how Rose deals with things. Dimitri comes to her room and takes her out to see Lissa after hours. And she says she's going to start dealing with her problems herself instead of making Rose do everything. She's going to start using compulsion on everyone to make them leave them alone. Flashes of memory from Miss Karp come to Rose then. She told Rose to stop Lissa from using her power because the more she uses it, the worse it will be for her, and that they will find out, and they will come for her. Looks like she's about to use a whole lot of her power.
Yeah.
Prop.
Montage.
Prop's not going to be good.
No. Lissa wasn't lying, but it took Rose a little while to figure out what was going on. Lissa never uses her compulsion when Rose is around to see it, so Rose slips inside her mind and watches it happen. She gets really upset at seeing Lissa doing this and takes out her frustrations in her training with Dimitri. He notices that her hands are all banged up and grabs a first aid kit to clean them. He spends a lot of time rubbing them and then talks about Rose and how she will be a good guardian and how he doesn't believe all the rumours going around about her because he knows her character.
He's such a good guy.
It's really cool.
He's good.
And hot. Then he tells a story from his childhood about living in a commune and that his mother is a blood whore and his father was abusive. So when he was 13, he beat him up.
Mm.
Plus points in Dimitri's column. Mm-hmm. Rose struggles with her ugly hands, thinking this is just the start of her beauty withering away and how she's going to have to cut her hair when she gets her promise mark tattoo. Dimitri tells her not to cut it, but to wear it up. This is a very intimate moment between the two of them, but it's not really a big deal, right? Right? I mean, just got a crush on him, you know? Nothing untoward is happening. Nothing untoward is happening.
Mm-mm. Nope.
But he's so hot.
Oh my gosh, he's so hot. Liz's compulsion has propelled her back into the spotlight. When Rose slips into her head again, she notices Natalie asking a lot of questions about her sudden rise in popularity and how it's odd that everyone suddenly wants to know what she's doing all the time and how they've mostly stopped gossiping about Rose and are defending her instead.
Natalie asks a lot of questions.
Natalie asks a lot of questions.
In one breath.
Yes. And it's ridiculous. And it was super well done in the movie.
Yes.
Yeah. Lisa distracts her and goes on about her business. In church, two guys start making fun of Rose, and Lisa uses compulsion on both of them at the same time to make them apologize. She's getting really powerful in something that no one else can do. This is kind of a big deal. The sermon makes Rose remember that she wanted to know about shadow-kissed Anna, and then she realizes that Miss Carp and Lisa weren't the only ones that could heal people with magic.
What?
Saint Vladimir could too. And now she needs to get back to reading about him. She asks Mason in a fake, flirty sort of way to ask Christian to get the books about Saint Vladimir that are in the chapel attic so she can read them. She also asks Mason to tell Christian that what she said about Lisa thinking he's a creep was a lie, and that she's sorry.
Get them primary sources, girl.
Yeah.
Mason successfully retrieved the books from Christian and gave them to Rose. While reading about Saint Vladimir, clearly suffering from depression, but how he had his shadow-kissed Anna to help relieve some of his pressures of healing people all the time, she remembers a time when Ms. Carp told her she was shadow-kissed and to stop Lisa before it was too late. She's just about to put everything together about Lisa, Ms. Carp and St. Vladimir when Mason comes to her room and sneaks her out to a party in Lisa's room. While there, she watches Lisa surrounded by her sycophants. One of the partiers asks Rose about being bitten and Lisa immediately starts compelling him to stop. Rose then remembers the party from 2 years ago where a royal brought a feeder and was taking advantage of her. Rose was too drunk to stop the guy, so Lisa followed him to his room and made him trash everything in there with a baseball bat. Rose manages to stop Lisa before she makes the guy bash his own head in. School officials showed up then and Lisa broke the compulsion. Rose, thinking about Mrs. Carp again and her warnings that things are going to get worse, takes the blame for everything, gets suspended, then breaks out of school with Lisa a couple of days later. The party this time doesn't get quite that far, especially because that night, Rose vowed never to drink around Lisa again.
Yikes.
Wow. That's a high school party and a half.
But yikes at how scary Lisa got.
Yeah. She needs somebody to make sure she's all right.
Yeah. Yeah, she does. Oh, and guess what? The compulsion is really getting out of control and is totally unnecessary. Aaron broke up with Mia and is now back with Lisa. Everybody loves her, and looking at her, you'd think she was reveling in all the attention, but Rose can see past that. She knows that Lisa is practically dead inside. She talks to Lisa's elemental basics teacher about the possibility of specializing in more than one element, which, no way, that would totally burn you out. And she asks if the teacher knows what element Saint Vladimir specialized in, or Miss Carp. She says she doesn't know about St. Vladimir because everyone was so focused on his saintliness and holy spirit that they never wrote down what his element was, and that Miss Carp never specialized. Do we believe this? I don't know.
Does anything here ring true?
Holy Spirit?
Just constantly, you're not going to write the details down of St. Vladimir. Really?
Yeah, it's not important. He's just so holy. That's all we care about.
I bet they wrote down what he had for breakfast every day.
They probably did. But not.
Nice slice of toast.
But
cup
not
of tea.
Anything about his element.
Extra milk. Best get those primary sources checked properly.
Yeah, really.
Dear diary, my elemental power is... Sorry.
Rose tells Lyssa all about all of this and how she should stop hanging out with the royals and go back to hanging out with Natalie and Christian, but she can't. Not yet. Rose talks to Christian later and eats her pride to apologize to him. She tells him he's good for Lyssa and that she needs help. Christian would love to spend time with Lyssa again, but with all the royals around, that's not going to happen, even though he's a royal too. He suggests asking Kirova or Dimitri for help, but she can't do that!
They're adults. The next day, Lyssa is so excited. There's a school dance coming up, and Victor, sick as he is, has told Natalie he will take her shopping at the mall for a new dress and has invited Lyssa along. Dimitri convinced the headmistress that he could use this opportunity to train Rose, and since he's Lyssa's guardian and would have to go, Rose gets to go too.
Oh, Dimitri.
Yay.
Coming through.
Aww. There are some of the guardians there too. They spend the long ride talking about guardian stuff and about what Rose would do if she encountered a Strigoi that she used to know. Would she be able to kill them? What if she were made Strigoi? Wouldn't she want someone to kill her? Yes, definitely. And Dimitri feels the same way. She realises why they are connecting so much. They're both so serious about their jobs as guardians.
Andy's hot. And I mean, she's pretty herself. Victor mentions a guardian named Mikhail and his Maroi, Sonia. They were lovers, but she turned Strigoi on purpose, and now he has to kill her. Oh,
what?
Miss Sonia? She's Miss Carp. Ooh, gasp! Could Rose do that? Could she kill someone she loves? Rose actually knew about Miss Carp already. She found out the day they broke out of school. She overheard some guardians talking about it, but vowed not to tell Lyssa because she was afraid that Lyssa would eventually do the same thing.
Dang.
So they ran away before Lyssa could use her compulsion anymore and go crazy and turn Strigoi too.
The shopping trip is not so fun since Rose is on guard duty. Lyssa buys her some clothes and a very sexy dress just in case she gets to go to the dance too. They also look at jewellery, a pretty necklace in particular, but it's too expensive for Lyssa to buy for Rose, so they leave the store without it. On the way back to school, Rose talks to Dimitri about never getting to try on clothes again. He says she'll get to whenever she has time off, but she never wants to break from guarding Lyssa. She asks him if the dress she got will endanger her reputation. He says it will endanger the school, and she falls asleep on his shoulder. Hot. Oh, dear me.
Like, I just want to be there. I just want to rest my head on his shoulder.
I bet it's a comfortable shoulder.
I bet it is. Get covered up by his cowboy jacket, which I've failed to mention in the summary, because really it's not important that he wears a duster, but it also kind of is important that he wears a duster.
Yeah.
Because he's adorable.
And a dork, and I love it.
Walking across campus after the shopping trip, Rose hops on benches, feeling on top of the world after her little catnap on Dimitri's shoulder.
And so do we, Rose, and so do we.
So do we. Oh my gosh. Then, all of a sudden, the solid wood bench gives way under her, trapping her foot. She falls, her ankle snaps, and she blacks out.
Yikes.
Yikes. She wakes up in the medical center, groggy from drugs, but completely fine. Her ankle isn't injured at all. Dimitri is at her bedside, which makes things even better. And then he gives her presents. Even better. Dimitri bought her some lip gloss. And Victor bought the expensive necklace they looked at in the store.
Ooh.
Dimitri said Victor bought it to celebrate her first outing as a guardian, but there's a note with it talking about it being a miracle that she didn't get hurt and that she lives a charmed life and that Lyssa is lucky to have her. It clicks for Rose right then that the car accident that killed Lyssa's parents and her brother should have killed her too. But Lyssa brought her back to life with her powers, and that's why they have their bond. Speaking of Lyssa, where is she?
I love how it's taken this long for the penny to drop.
Yeah.
Like, suddenly the hamster wheel, it's like, chug, 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 chug.
Oh my god. She healed me, surprisingly.
Years to work that out, love.
Yes.
And that's why we're bonded, surprisingly. Using their bond, Rose finds her in the attic of the chapel and just not well. She's pretty manic, crying about Rose and having healed her, afraid that Rose will be mad that she used her powers, dreading going back to class the next day and faking liking everyone, dreading going to the dance with Aaron when she doesn't even like him. Christian arrives then and tells her she doesn't have to do all that anymore. They got back at Mia and were pretty shitty about it. It turns out that Mia was spreading rumours and hateful to Lyssa because her brother Andre fooled around with her in secret, then dumped her because she wasn't royal. Yeah, that's not nice. Yikes. That's not cool.
No, that's pretty gross.
But Andre isn't even alive anymore, and Lyssa had nothing to do with any of that. It doesn't matter. Christian kisses her, tells her he likes her the way you should like someone, not the way she fake likes Aaron. She gets mad at him and tells him to leave and starts cutting again. Rose snaps out of Lyssa and tells Dimitri everything. He rushes out to find her.
Oh.
Poor Lyssa.
Lyssa is passed out when Dimitri carries her into the medical center. Rose is ushered away, but comes back later to visit. Lyssa is angry with Rose for telling about her cutting, but Rose had to do it. She also plans on telling about her healing powers, too, but she hasn't done that yet. Rose tells Lyssa she realized that Lyssa healed her after the car accident, and that's when their bond developed and when Lyssa's depression started. Lyssa's upset because she thinks they're going to treat her like they treated Miss Carp and sends Rose away. Things aren't so good for Rose after that. Everyone's talking about her again or completely ignoring her. She decides she doesn't even want to go to the dance, but Mason comes to drag her anyway. They'll sneak out soon to go to an after party and everything will be fine. Plus, he's got a surprise for her.
She puts on the sexy black dress and the necklace and they rush across campus towards the dance. They run into Dimitri and another guardian along the way and he can't take his eyes off Rose in that dress. It's capital T, capital D, that dress. At the dance, Mason takes Rose to see Jesse and Ralph, who apologise to Rose for the rumours and tell her that Mia made them start them by sleeping with both of them.
Sheesh and a half.
She's got some nerve, that girl, really.
I mean, it's not surprising that she was able to make up a rumor about them both sleeping with Rose, because she did it herself.
Exactly, exactly. So the truth spreads across the dance floor, and soon Mia is yelling at Lissa. Rose arrives just in time to hear Mia shout about Lissa being crazy and having to be put on medication and about her cutting herself. So Rose punches her in the face.
Yes!
At last!
Finally!
Yes! Yes! Lissa runs out and Rose shouts for Christian to go find her. She's escorted away from the dance and back to her room. Rose gets inside Lissa's head and sees that she and Christian are in the attic, but then Christian is hurt and strange guardians are dragging Lissa away. Something tells Rose she has to get Dimitri immediately. But she suddenly forgets why.
She runs up to his room, says she's there for Lissa, but as soon as she sees him, she's overcome with lust. She can't remember why she needed to be there other than to be with him. There's a voice in her head telling her to touch him, to kiss him, to not think about anything other than him. She comes onto him, hard, and he tells her she needs to go back to her room, that this is inappropriate. But as he grabs her to push her hands away from his bare chest, and we all drool, something comes over him, and he starts kissing her and pulls her dress off. They make out a lot, and also talk about killing Strigoi and how Rose seems to know about Dimitri's feelings. They make out some more, and Rose decides she's finally about to have sex for the first time, and Dimitri senses it too. He takes off her necklace, and the charm breaks. He throws it out the window, and she remembers Lissa being kidnapped. They rush into action.
Awkward.
Man, leave that necklace on for just a little bit longer, dude.
It'd been so funny. He was like, oh, we're under a spell. Put this back on.
I love that, though. And he takes it off and he puts it on the table. And then she's like, whoa, what happened? And he's like, whoa, I don't know. But then he's sitting on the bed and she's there like naked. And he reaches over and touches the necklace and is immediately like, oh. And then he puts his hand on her hip and is like, oh. And then she's like, oh. And then he's like, no, don't touch it anymore. But I can just imagine it happening. He's like, what happens if I touch this and this?
That is a science. And this Dimitri performed a science right Hong Kong. That's Dimitri performing some science.
Yeah, it is. It really is. So it's a necklace, a little Hong Kong.
Let's write that down. Necklace equals. And she's just like, my rack's looking great
yeah,
today.
Loving it. Loving it. Dimitri's a better human being than that. He did not honk her bosom. I mean, he probably did. He probably
did. Yeah, but
did.
He didn't go, ha ha. Squeesh. What's the Russian for squish? Is there a Russian for honk?
I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is. It honk your bosom. Because I like it.
Oh, dear.
We still got more to do. Go on.
I know, I'm trying to. So they find Kirova and tell her Rose was under a compulsion spell to attack Dimitri.
Attack.
And that Lissa was...
Attack.
Sorry?
To attack him. Wink.
Attack him with her tongue. Naked chest and everything. And that Lissa was kidnapped by guardians. And that one of the guardians belongs to Viktor Dashkov. And they need to go and find her. Panic. Christian is found and corroborates the story. So, after entirely too long, I mean, this has taken some
this
time to get here.
Important.
They finally set out to find Lissa. You what?
I said this is important.
It is.
Why are they wasting so much time? Waste
paperwork.
Time by bosom honking, not by whatever they're doing right now.
Yeah, true. Rose stays partially inside her head, telling Dimitri where to go and when they get close. She falls into Lissa's head completely. Victor tells her that no one is going to come for her because Rose should be thoroughly distracted. And there's been rumours spread already that Lissa has run away. Why has he kidnapped her, though? Because he needs her to heal him. We are not shocked by this. He tells her that she has specialised in another element that has long been forgotten, spirit. He's known for a long time, ever since Natalie saw her heal that raven. He realised that she could heal and that she brought Rose back to life after the accident. He knows that if she can bring someone back to life, she'll be able to heal his disease, but that she'll always have to do it, so he's got to keep her. When she says no, she won't give up her life for his, he brings out another Morai, and then she screams.
Yikes.
Victor's a dick!
Yeah, he is. The Morai brought in is an air user, and he begins torturing Lissa until she relents and heals Victor. Then she passes out. Rose and the Guardians stop and make a plan of attack. They head for the cabin, but Dimitri stops Rose, telling her to stay behind because both he and Lissa need her to be safe. He calls her Rosa, a pet name that slipped out during the compulsion love, and even though she doesn't seem to have noticed that he said he needs her, Rosa, to be safe, she stays behind. We all noticed it, though. We all noticed that he wants to keep her safe and called her Rosa. And we all
everything to do with
swooned a little bit at that. She slips back inside Lissa's mind and watches as she compels a guard to stay quiet while she sneaks out the window. She curses, and a voice asks what she saw. The voice belongs to Christian, who's stowed away in the back of the SUV.
Surprise!
It's Christian! She tells him she saw Lissa sneaking out the window and that they are going to save her.
And they do! Excellent. She's surrounded by Psyhounds, meaning Victor sent the ones that found them way back when they were on the run.
Oh, man.
Not the school.
Oh, man.
She's very weak.
Oh, no.
Rose gets there first and takes down two hounds. All the training with Dimitri has certainly paid off. Christian arrives and lights a branch on fire and joins the fight. But he's soon mauled from behind by another hound.
Yikes.
A guardian arrives then and shoots the remaining hounds. Lissa, exhausted as she is, tries to heal Christian, but she can't. It doesn't look like he's going to make it, but then Rose offers her neck to Lissa, who drinks enough blood to be able to heal Christian. Rose passes out and wakes up back in the school's medical centre.
A few days pass. Headmistress Karova and a few others now know about Lissa's specialisation with spirit and her ability to heal, but they keep it quiet from the rest of the school. Rose goes to see Dimitri, who tells her that she needs to turn him in for what he did to her. See, he's a good guy. She says no. It was the compulsion, but still, he says what happened was wrong. Later, their age difference won't matter, but now she's in school and needs to be with boys her own age and to go to dances and try on dresses. Rose doesn't want any of that, of course, and we've seen that change come over her throughout the book. Then, Dimitri says he doesn't like her like that, and rather than fight about it, she walks away.
Liar.
She's so grown up. I'm so proud of her. She goes to visit Victor, who is in a cell on campus, to get him to break the compulsion between them. He says it's over already, but that it wouldn't have worked if they both didn't already have feelings for each other. His spell just removed inhibitions and made them want to stay together. It didn't make them want each other any more than they already did. Well then.
Before she has time to dwell on that, though, Natalie comes in. Rose has mixed feelings about Natalie, mostly pity, though, since she's so awkward. And now her dad's going to some scary Moray royal prison. Pity soon turns to fear when she realises that Natalie has turned Strigoi to get her father out of his cell.
Yikes.
Oh my goodness.
Yikes.
She lets him out and slams Rose into a wall a bunch of times.
Yes.
Rose can't believe she turned Strigoi for him, but she did it for the greater good.
The greater good.
He can't become king until the Moray if he's in jail. Yeah, that's not going to happen anyway because of all he's done. So, you know, whatever. But if she can't control herself from killing a bunch of people now that she's a monster, well then, someone will just have to kill her.
Shrug.
And we shrug. Hey, that happens right now. Because in comes Dimitri, looking like a god of death, who quickly dispatches Natalie. He carries Rose back to the medical centre. On the way, Woozy, being wall-bashed, she asks him about what Victor said about the charm. He says yes, it's true, and he wanted her then, and still wants her now. But even more than the age difference, they can't both be guardians and protect Lyssa if they love and want to protect each other instead. And she understands. Oh.
Things go relatively back to normal on campus, except that Lyssa and Christian are now dating. Mia starts bad-mouthing them, the disgraced royals that they are, and spreading rumors, but everyone should be used to that by now. It's another rumor. Get used to it. Rose continues training with Dimitri, and they act as mentor and mentee should. Lyssa has started taking medication to treat her depression, which dulls her ability to use her spirit magic, but maybe that's better than going crazy and want to hurt herself, or worse, turning Strigoi to cut herself off from magic altogether. She longs to use her spirit magic, though. Rose goes to the priest and asks about how Saint Vladimir died, thinking that he probably finally went crazy or turned Strigoi, but no. He died peacefully in his sleep, with shadow-kissed Anna by his side.
Oh.
She realizes then that she'll always be able to help Lyssa control her magic and will keep her safe. She walks back across campus and sees the raven that Lyssa healed and realizes that he's shadow-kissed too. She holds out her arm so the two shadow-kissed beings can together save Lyssa. But the bird literally scoffs at her and flies away.
What a jerk of a bird.
It's such a good ending, though. And they did it so well in the movie, too. It was fantastic.
It's perfect.
Fantastic.
Right, I think we need to take a few moments and digest Dimitri.
Oh, we just need to take a few moments and drool over Dimitri, I think is what you meant to say.
We need to calm down.
We do. We do.
We do. We do.
Please remember that Fictional Hangover is a free podcast, and always will be. If you'd like to support the show, stop listening to us for just a few minutes, become a patron of ours on Patreon at patreon.com/fictionalhangover, then come back. If you can't do this monthly but still want to support us because you just like the show so much, head over to Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/fictionalhangover to drop us a one-time tip. Your support on Patreon and Ko-fi will help us bring you more spoiler-filled discussions, book character cosplays, and ridiculous content you know and love. Now, back to the episode. I think, like, whatever it was before that you hadn't read, Night Circus, we need to focus on you, and you need to start out with your standout moments. Because you haven't read this before.
True. It's like I've broke her.
I'm back. Don't worry. I did a honk and I'm back.
Standout moments. Dimitri without his top on.
Yes, indeed.
I don't know. Okay. I enjoyed all of the book because I like Dimitri and Rose's relationship. I like the entire relationship. I liked how it started as like this teenage crush for somebody she shouldn't have a crush on. And then as Rose matured throughout the book, their relationship kind of got a little bit more adult. And then it got very adult. And then they had a very mature conversation about how, yes, they do like each other and they want to be together. But the first and foremost guardians and responsibility of whomever the guardian, Lissa, must always come first. Mm-hmm. And how there's no bickering, there's no fighting between them, there's misunderstanding, but it's more internal misunderstanding, not knowing what's going on. Mm. And then they get the clarity. There's actual communication.
I know. Are you shocked?
I'm shocked and I'm delighted and I want to find Michelle Mead. And as I shake her, weeping, go, thank you. Thank you. So yeah, I absolutely adored that. But I struggle a little bit with their relationship because did they actually give the ages? For some reason in my head, Rose is 17 and he's 24.
That's true.
Am I right?
That's true. And okay. Listed in the book.
Yes.
In the movie, though, I think that she's 18, I think they imply, and he's 28 or something like that.
Yeah,
he's a little bit
older.
But
in the movie. And
she was also a tiny bit older as well.
Yeah, well, I can understand with movies, they try and make it a little bit more legal.
Yeah.
Depending on the country you're in.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can understand when someone is 17 and someone is 24, there is a very big difference in maturity levels. And even just 2 years later, if she was 19 and he was 26, that's completely different.
Yeah.
Because there's a life experience that's informed and helped them grow. So I can completely see where they're coming from. But it's so inappropriate because he is an authority figure for her.
Yeah.
He's responsible for her.
I do like, though, that he's not a teacher. He's not teaching other students. He's just a mentor, which I feel like is a little bit less gross than if he were a teacher and, like, targeting her in a classroom.
Yes.
And also,
it's not House of Night.
No. Yikes. Thank goodness. And I mean, we know why PC Cass did that. We know that she also hates Lauren Blake, and so it's fine. But
it's purposeful, so it's fine.
Yeah. So in this case, though, I don't really have a problem with it because Dimitri told her it couldn't happen. Even though it did happen, but like they couldn't control that. It was a compulsion. They had no control over that at all. But then he's like, this is not right, and you need to turn me in. I need to be out of here because that was super inappropriate what happened between us.
He takes responsibility.
He does. He does because he's a good guy.
Yeah. And yeah, like I was saying, the age difference feels a little bit awkward. His authority relationship over her being a mentor is a little bit awkward, but it's done in a very mature fashion, so I'm not opposed to it. I kind of liken it to, like, you know, if you were going to the gym and there was a personal trainer, that kind of situation.
Yeah. I also think that her having died and been brought back to life, I think that changed her quite a bit. I mean, she's still a goofy teenager with teenager drama. But now, and then, like, when she realizes that what shadow-kissed means, that she died and was brought back to life, so she has a richer understanding of life and death and her passions and what she should focus on, I think that aged her a little bit too.
No, I agree. I completely agree. And it was nice to see the character mature quite quickly, relatively speaking, for one book.
Mm-hmm.
This main series only has 6 books.
Correct.
So there was part of us that was kind of thinking, going into reading the book, having just seen the movie, is it a case of it's going to take all six books before Rose becomes the woman she should be? Or, you know, how is the development going to take place? And it happened in book one, and that delights me because I don't feel like I have to wait around. And yes, I know I'm going to experience some teenage angst in the later books because the teenagers happen.
Yeah.
Hell, I'm in my 30s and I have teenage angst about things. It happens. You know, you don't act your age. We all have that level of immaturity, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But it's not dominating the narrative. And if it was, I don't know how much I would be happy, you know, going through the series. But after I read the book the first time, and I did it between Christmas and New Year, really excited to get into it. I couldn't wait. I think I listened to it in one sitting, and I just really enjoyed it. But I knew I missed things, so I listened to it again because I enjoyed it that much as well, to get the other bits and pieces. And I just enjoyed the sassiness of it and the goofiness of it, but also that like underlining build up to something bigger. And it sets the scene so lovely for what's going to happen. And it sets the you know, about the whole Shadowkissed and St. Vladimir and Anna. And I want more, actually, about St. Vladimir and Anna. I want a story just about them.
That would
because
be cool.
I'm interested in those characters. And even, like, Ms. Carp is a delightful character because she's kooky and crazy. And there's always that kooky and crazy teacher in every school. And, you know...
But then she turns Strigoi.
We're going to see more of her. Yeah, and then she goes Strigoi. You know we're going to see more of her. And it's just this drip fade of, well, this is going to happen, and this has happened. I mean, even Natalie going Strigoi so soon in the book, you know, you can kind of... She's just this goofy character that sits around and asks a million questions, speaks six to the dozen, and you take for granted that she's there. And then all of a sudden, hi! I'm Strigoi now. Come on, Dad, let's get you out the cell. Oh, Rose, bang, 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 repeatedly against a wall. And it's like, whoa, this is mint. Absolutely adored that. That scene was brilliant.
Yeah.
And then when you compare it to like the goofy scenes within the mall where they're going hunting for that dress and things like that, it's a wonderful contrast. And I just enjoyed it, you know, for what it was. And yes, it's a teen vampire, but it didn't, the vampire aspect didn't dominate. Again, it's one of these things where they all happen to be a vampire, but it just seems to be more magic based.
Yeah. I do like, in comparing this one, the magic and the vampire, which is something that is huge in House of Night, I like that this one maintained the vampire-ness.
Yes.
While precisely. I love all of the magic in House of Night, I like that this one has magic and vampires. Like, and they
it's
still drink...
and magic,
yes.
Rather than
yeah.
magic users who just happen to drink blood on occasion.
Yeah, I like that drinking blood is important in this series, rather than just something that you do for funsies.
Exactly, it's not flyaway at all.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy the different take on blood drinking.
Yeah.
Because it's more popularised that to be bitten and to feed a vampire is this huge sexual act, and it's brilliant and it's the best thing and everybody wants to be enthralled with a vampire, where in this culture it's deeply frowned upon. And I like that different take on it.
Yeah.
I like the fact that it was hugely taboo to do that kind of thing, so it was refreshing to have that element to it.
Yeah, I like the Romanian vampires to begin with. Strigoi and Moroi are actual types of Romanian vampires, so I like that that's a different story that you don't typically see. And Dampiers too. Dampiers are real. Half vampires, like I like that. You don't see those stories a whole lot.
You did in the Penny Dreadfuls.
Yeah.
But that's it. I like the fact it's leaned right into the history of it, really. Since Vladimir, I cringe because it just feels so unbelievably cheesy. But I freaking love it because it's so unbelievably cheesy. You know, if it's terrible, I love it.
Yeah. I think it's strange how long it took for them to put all of this together, and that one, no one else did.
Yes.
You can't tell me that no one in the entire school has noticed Lissa fucking compelling everyone all the time.
Yeah.
And that's, like, a key thing right there, because they say that, yeah, all the vampires can use compulsion, and Strigoi are really good at it, but Moroi can just do it with humans. And she's, like, compelling people all over the place.
She's got the entire school under compulsion.
Yeah. And that's, nobody notices it or thinks it's strange.
The teachers aren't involved, though, are they? I mean, you have the headmistress popping in and out of again, but she's next to useless.
Yeah.
Dimitri's not a teacher at all.
Yeah.
Ms. Karp's disappeared and then, you know, she's gone to Strigoi. So there's not really any authority figures within the book that much. And it's just that element is a little bit odd.
Yeah, and you know, we don't see a lot of it from Lissa's point of view, so we don't know what she's going through in classes. It could be that they're all paying attention to her and we just don't know it because the book is from Rosa's point of view.
Yeah, yeah, I would be interested to see Lissa's point of view in this book.
Yeah.
It will be interesting. They're very different people as well. So vastly different.
Yes, they really
because
are.
Because Lissa seems so quiet and reserved, but then, you know, she stands up with authority when she needs to. She doesn't, like, unless she's compelling everybody, she doesn't throw out a royal weight around. Whereas, you know, Rose is just sassy one-liners and giving shit to people.
So great. She's so sarcastic and it's fantastic.
I think that's why I liked her so much. I like Rose so much because she's just completely relatable. She says what you want to say without regret. And it's nice.
One thing that I liked but also kind of hated at the same time was all of the rumors spreading around school all the time. But I like also that they get bothered by them. Rose breaks down crying about it. But it's not like she hyper-focuses on all these rumors. They finally just kind of give up on them and they're like, oh, it's another rumor, whatever, it's fine. And they just go on about their business. I hate all the rumors, but I also, I mean, it's high school.
Yeah, it kind of turns into white noise in the end.
Yeah, it really does. I do like, though, and it's the same in the movie, like almost line for line, when at the dance, Mason's dragged up Jesse and Ralph and they tell her the truth. And she's like, oh, you're telling me something that I already know. Great. Thanks.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. You're telling me I didn't do something that I know I didn't do? I'm so shocked.
Shock.
I like that.
You mean I wasn't there when I said I wasn't there?
Oh, you don't say. I do like that.
Can we talk about the movie for a little bit?
I think that we should talk about the movie. It's almost exactly the same.
Yes, thank you. So I, as we know, watched the movie first. And I watched it years ago. And I was like, delightful, this movie. It's so terribly good. And goodly terrible.
Yeah.
I remember it was on Netflix and it, you know when it's like 11 o'clock at night and you're like, oh, I don't want to go to bed. I want to watch a movie. What can I watch? And I was like, oh, Vampire Academy's on. And stayed up to like 1 o'clock in the morning watching it by myself and just being delighted by the wonderfulness that is Vampire Academy, the movie. But I didn't know how faithful to the book it was. And I am delighted by actually how good a translation it is.
Yeah.
It gets the key elements in there. It cuts out a lot of the stuff that doesn't need to be in the movie, like from the book into the movie. It keeps the characters extremely faithful. That even, I was plucking out some of the script was from the book and I was like, actually, this is not given enough credit
Yeah, it's a good movie. They did a good job.
It is, and I will not have a bad word said about that movie. I will fight you. This is my hill.
Yeah. I watched it just a couple of days ago, and I was watching it with my husband, who has not read the book or watched the movie before, and I really only noticed two things that were different. At the beginning, when they get back to campus, there's a Strigoi attack, which did not happen in the book.
No. I will add to the beginning as well. They're only out of school for a year
instead of
and
two.
They don't have, there's no human male roommate
right.
mentioned.
And then they had that cat, and then they took the cat to school, which was then sacrificed later, which was terrible, and I hated that. You know, so let's stick to the random animals, not pets. Yeah. A fox, a rabbit, a bird, and the raven. Let's stick with those guys.
We like anonymous animal sacrifices.
Yeah, I didn't like that they killed the kitty. And something else, it was slightly out of order at the end, them finding out about her powers, and it happened slightly out of order, but that doesn't change anything.
No. And the kind of ending with Dimitri and Rose was slightly different.
Yeah.
But not so different that the meaning was lost.
Yeah.
I really liked it when she came up to him and managed to get him on his back, and then she was like, "Are you not entertained?"
Yeah, that was really good. I think it was a cute way for her to share with the world that, yeah, I'm still totally head over heels in love with this guy, but I'm going to let it go.
It was her empowerment moment.
Yeah.
It was excellent.
So great, though, because she's like, "Just kiss me. Just one more time." And he's like, "Oh, no. But then they get so close, and she's whoosh, flips him over and starts cackling about it. It was perfect.
Yes, I really enjoyed the movie. I'm going to have to go and watch it again.
I know. I want to watch it again, too. I wish it was on the same sort of service so we could watch it together. Yeah. With people, but not gonna happen.
I will sacrifice my £7.99 to buy it on Amazon. Gladly.
Yeah. Yeah. It needs to be owned.
It does.
So who was your favorite character?
Rose. Yeah. She's, like I say, she's sassy. She's ballsy. She's sarcastic. I love sarcasm. It might be the lowest form of wit, but I don't give a fig. I love it. So yeah, I think she's the best. And it helps that it's told from her point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just really like Rose. I like her growth in one book.
Yeah.
I like her attitude. She seems like good people.
Yeah, she does. I mean, she's still a goofy teenager, but she knows she has a responsibility. She knows what her life is going to be like.
She's a goofy teenager on the cusp. Yeah, she's got drive, she's got responsibility, she's got the 5-year plan laid down, you know, and it's not inattainable, it's well within our reach, it's well within our capabilities, mm-hmm. and she'll be bloody good at it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think Rose has to be my favourite character.
It's funny because we...
Though I will say, Natalie, the geeky dork, who says far too much, asks too many questions, and just seems to hover around everybody... I liked Geeky Natalie as well. I even liked a transition into Strigoi, to be perfectly honest. Because that was kind of like a she's all that moment. But with teeth.
And she takes off her glasses.
Yeah. And I really like that as well. Because I feel like, you know, I feel like a mix of Rose and Natalie. Like, I'm the goofy, awkward person who says far too much and needs to shut up and everybody needs to go away. Just go away, Claire. Go away. But then I like Rose's sassy sarcasm and rapier wit, and I wish I was more Rose. but I kind of want to she's all that moment. I'll take the glasses off and then throw people against the wall. I don't need to take my glasses off anymore because you can actually see my face properly. I've got new lenses. I do like Natalie as well. He was very well done in the book, in the movie.
Yeah,
as well.
Sarah Hyland did a fantastic job. Just like rambling on in the background when clearly everyone has stopped paying attention to her. I really like that one scene. I don't even remember what's happening, but she was talking about how she's never been naked in front of anyone, and one time she turned a plant around because she didn't want the plant to see her naked, and it was just rattling on, and Rose had stopped paying attention to her by this point.
You do kind of stop paying attention, but then you sit there and think,
did she just say that?
Besides the face of a plant. And then you kind of like look at your own houseplants and go, which side's the face of you? Anywho, sorry, your favorite character?
Oh, well, definitely Rose. Especially, what's her name? Zoe, I don't know how to pronounce her last name. She's Leah Thompson's daughter. And Leah Thompson is important in my life because of how much I love Back to the Future.
Is she?
Yes!
D-E-U-T-C-H.
So, yeah, she did a fantastic job. And like I said, Sarah Hyland also did a great job. I also really liked Christian. I like Christian quite a bit. Book and movie Christian were both pretty great. Do you know, I don't love movie Dimitri.
No.
He's not quite, I mean, he's Russian in real life. And I felt like his accent was terrible.
That accent was when we do Russian accents and we're taking the mick out of each other.
Yeah, I don't know. And he also, like, you know, like the scene in the movie when, like, she first encounters him, she goes in for her early morning practice and he's using the rings and he's, like, supposed to be super strong. He just kind of looked like a chunky dork. I wasn't swooning at him at this point.
No.
Doing his ring work. And he's, like, he's just got a doughy face. I feel like he needs to be svelte. Cheekbones for days.
He's too clean shaven.
Yeah.
I'm not the biggest fan of huge beards or anything like that. I'm not saying, you know, give him a big beard.
No, but he needs a shadow at least or something. He needs to be more rugged than he is.
He needs to... Do you know who I picture more as Dimitri? Like a Carl Urban style person?
Mm, yeah. Like, yeah, I'd be okay with that.
Again, with some rush, it's got to have some like rough stubble on there. And the guy, Danila Kozlowski, sorry, I've killed that name. He's in Vikings.
Yeah, I don't love his
face.
He
looks better in Vikings than he does in Vampire Academy because he's rough looking. Like, you know, obviously he's a Viking, but he's got the facial hair. And when I saw the picture of him in Viking, I was like, ah, that's more Dimitri that I think. Not so clean shaven. It's like he doesn't even know how to grow sort of facial hair. So, yeah, Dimitri has to have that, especially because it's established in the books, unless it's only like a nod and a wink with his duster in the movie, that he loves Westerns.
Yes. Well, and he's reads Louis L'Amour. Like, he clearly is a dusty cowboy.
Exactly. And you would think he would have a bit more of a dusty cowboy aesthetic.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Dimitri needs to have. So in my head, I've got more of a Carl Urban, a younger Carl Urban with facial hair.
Do you know who I imagine in my head when I read it and think about it? Jared Padalecki. Because he's freaking tall.
I'm sold. I'm sold.
The long hair.
He can be my guardian. That's fine. Yeah,
he's my Dimitri.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
We've cast our guardians.
We have.
We are sorted.
We have. It's fine.
I would love Vampire Academy to actually be a series.
I know. It would be really good.
It leads more to a TV series necessary than a series of movies.
I'd be okay with the movies, though, because each one, I mean, they're not that long. No. And there's a good story in each of them. And yeah, there's some stuff, and you'll come to notice this too, there's some stuff that goes along, but each one...
It's self-contained.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's excellent, because...
I mean, you wouldn't want to pick up...
Especially when you've got six books in the... You can't pick up Prisoner of Azkaban and not have read Philosopher's Stone.
And you probably wouldn't want to do that with Vampire Academy either. But still, like, there's something that happens...
No, but you know when you get a series of movies, And every now and again you go, I don't want to have to go through movie 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
I just need the feels. I'm in that mood where I need that particular movie. I need the feels I get from that. The joy, or I just, you know, when you're feeling like you want the sad moment, you need that relatability that you know you'll get from that movie. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would want from Vampire Academy. And if they did the movies, that would be spectacular. But it leans towards a TV show as well. Like, not very long series. Like, cut it down to being like 3 episodes.
So like a mini series.
Yeah, I've got no tolerance for long seasons at the moment. My attention span is next to nothing. So either make it a movie or make it a series where it's like 3 episodes and the story is told.
Do you know that, well, yes, I would love to watch this in its entirety, however way it would happen if it were to happen. I really want House of Night to become a TV series, and I feel like that better lends itself to a TV series than Vampire Academy does. Give me a 6 movie series of Vampire Academy.
Yeah. Well, we know from our discussions of House of Night that, for me, it's episodic and it's perfect for a TV show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm happy. I just want my vampires on the screen.
I know, me too.
I just want to sit and watch my vampires. That's it.
I need more vampires in my life.
It's never been... The vampire genre has never been a every now and again thing. Give me a vampire book and I will read it. All vampires all the time. I know when we were planning 2021 schedule and we were talking about books, there was a heck of a lot of vampire books on there, and we kind of went, ooh, we need to dial that back a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it would nearly turned into the year of the fang.
Yes.
That's a whole other podcast we'd need to start. I know.
I love vampires.
Yeah. So I just want them. And I am absolutely clamming for a TV series or some movies with vampires. You know, I even like the terrible vampire movies.
Yeah. I love all vampires.
I love Queen of the Damned, for God's sakes.
Now, the only thing I can think of when I think of Queen of the Damned is Aaliyah. May she rest in peace, doing her walk, and her head stays in the same spot, but her body moves. It's all I can think about all the time with that movie. It was weird.
Yeah. I even like Dracula 2000. Actually, it was classed as like 2001 by the time it came out. It's terrible, but I like it.
Yeah. Dracula dead loving it? Yes, please.
Yes. I just want vampire movies
all the time,
and vampire TV shows,
yeah,
and half naked vampires called Dimitri, half naked half vampires called Dimitri,
yeah,
with proper Russian accents.
It's so funny because he is Russian and he acts on the Russian stage. He is Russian.
He is Russian with the Russian and the Russian, but not the Russian in here. What's going on? No.
Anyway, yikes.
It's not a miracle of cinema. They've killed something. I don't get it. But yeah.
Do you have any surprises?
Oh, that took so bloody long for them to all figure it out.
That's all I've got, too. It took them so long to realize something was going on with Lissa. Too entirely long for them to put that together.
For me, it was also like, it took so long for Rose to figure it all out. Like, yes, Lissa brought you back to life in the car accident that should have killed you.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah. And you're inside her head.
Vladimir isn't Sim Vladimir for some random reason.
Yeah.
Think about it. It's all there. It's all obviously there. But they just don't pick on it. But I will say as well, the biggest surprise for me is how faithful the movie is.
I know, it's so good.
I'm going to watch the movie again this
week. Yeah, I'm going to have to watch it again too.
I want to watch it with you.
We can.
We need to make it happen.
We will. It's fine. Is it time?
It's time. Let's go. Fangs. Pew, 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 pew. Ooh. Into some would you rather.
That's something else that I like, that they have fangs.
Yay.
Always, too. They're always there.
Uh-huh. None of this retractable things.
No. No. They're real. They're real and they're there. Always. Why am I not wearing my fangs today?
Our fangs. We're going to have to go full dress up for the last one.
Yes. So. What is our... Jesus. What's our first question?
I have no idea. We asked on social media, would you rather be a Morai or a Strigoi? So on Facebook, 58% said Morai and 42% said Strigoi. On Instagram, it was 63% Morai and 37% Strigoi. And on Twitter, it was 67 Morai and 33 Strigoi. These are remarkably even numbers and similar across the board of social media.
They really
What's going on?
I don't know.
Strange. We had loads of comments. Loads of lovely comments.
We did.
So Mia on Facebook. Hey, he's spreading rumors.
I think Mia is spreading all of the rumors. All of the time.
Shocking. Well, she said... I like Morai. I would rather burn bright with uniqueness.
Haley on Facebook said, power and immortality and never having to be outside during the daytime. Yes, please.
Jennifer on Facebook said, Strigoi. I would start a fight club with my fellow Strigoi. But you know, the therapeutic jinjitsu meets animal floor meets boxing kind. I absolutely adore that response.
I love it when Jennifer pops up. I love it when she pops up in our Would You Rather.
Lines of gold.
Yes. Steph on Facebook said, Death the regular undead fighter badasses. I pretty much avoid the sun now anyways. Yay, ginger life.
Oh, ginger skin.
Bless her.
Constance on Facebook, elemental powers and a soul would be great, thanks. Which implies that she doesn't actually have a soul.
I don't either.
I never have mine. I leave it in a jar. You know, when you go through automatic doors, mine stays shut.
Yeah. Coral on Facebook said, scary, immortal, powerful. Yes, I'll take it. I think you would get used to being a creature of the night. Yeah, you would be, especially if you were so fucking powerful that everyone was terrified of you.
You'd have to talk with a bad accent and say, I'm a creature of the night.
I want to drink your blood.
Ask Edge on Instagram said, I would heart be a Morai vampire because you have more of a chance luring your victim to you by magic and you can live like a human and be disguised. So it is better as a vampire.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you get the pros of being a vampire, but you can also blend in better.
Yeah.
Finally, Mr. Jitters on Instagram said, I'll be a vampire witch king in a fabulous red dress with lace and pearls everywhere. And gold, of course. I mean, we can't forget gold.
I think that comment wins.
Yep. I love that Mr. Jitters is immediately making himself royal.
I love that Mr. Jitters is basically making himself the vampire version of Galadriel, as beautiful and terrible.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. So what do you say?
Oh, I really debated over this one, you know.
Yeah.
Even so far as to go into the Would You Rather group and poll, but then change my mind. And then change my mind again and just not answer it because I thought I need more time.
Your time's up.
Dang it. I like the idea of having the elemental power. I'm not going to be so far as to say I'm going to be like, I would be Alyssa. You know, that's a once in a generation Buffy style thing. Except vampire instead of Slayer. But I kind of like the Strigoi. If I'm going to be a vampire, I want to be a proper vampire. I want to be an old-fashioned vampire. I want the bloodlust and the bangs and the strength. So yeah, I'm going down the dark side where the blood tastes like cookies.
Yeah, I'm totally there with you. I don't think anyone should be surprised by this, what with me not having a soul and all, and always, always choosing a traditional vampire over a non-traditional vampire.
I thought the elemental power might be interesting, but then...
But you know, as a Strigoi...
It's not a selling factor to me.
You talk about not... Well, you know, it can kind of be good to have an elemental power, but you know, the Strigoi have super strong compulsion, too. So while they're not bringing...
As long as I've got my Jedi powers, it's fine.
Yeah, so they're not bringing people back to life. They are bringing people to the undead, and they have compulsion, and they're super strong. And I feel like the Moroi are kind of weak.
Yeah.
Especially since they don't use their powers against the Strigoi.
Don't use the powers, and they rely on guardians.
Yeah.
Do they really, really, really need guardians? Or have they just built a culture of laziness?
Yeah, that. So
Especially when Christian helps Rose fight the Psi-hounds with his elemental flame magic.
Yeah, and also we know that there are only three ways to kill a Strigoi. Silver stake, decapitation, or fire. And fire is an element that they can use. So why not train yourself to set people on fire?
I just don't get it.
Later. So I'm going to be...
Terrible cough you've got there.
I know,
there.
It's bad. So I'm going to be a Strigoi.
Excellent. We will be Strigoi. We will.
We will be
vampires
Strigoi
together. Of the night. Children of
yes,
the night
we
together.
Will. We will.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Do we have another question?
We do have more question. This one. Slightly different. Okay. Would you rather be Moroi or Dampier?
Easy. Dampier.
Why?
Not so easy.
Because of Dimitri?
Well, you know what? I don't ruin my life by a man. I don't need a man. I mean, you know, it's nice for arm candy and, you know, hobbies, but I don't know. I've preferred the Dampier than the Moroi. Because again, the Moroi, as much as you've got elemental powers, they feel very weak and completely dependent.
Yeah. Same.
And that's... At least with the Dampier, you know, they haven't got the blood-sucking need. They're not full vampires, so they don't have the need to drink blood.
Mm-mm, they can eat a hamburger.
Live a relatively normal life. Mm-hmm.
They're not affected by the sun. The Moroi are, a little bit, but they can be out in the sun and it's fine. But you can be out in the sun all the time. If you so choose.
And you can kick ass.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, Dampier.
Yeah, me too.
Cool.
I almost feel like we should ask this question again later.
I agree.
What's our next question?
Would you rather be friends with Rose or Lyssa?
I want to be Rose, so I will be friends with Lyssa. Especially, you know, if you can get her using her compulsion in a way that is not over the top. Like, just when you need something, when you need to sneak out of your dorm room to go to a party, then you can use your compulsion. Don't use it all the time and go crazy and cut yourself. But,
yeah.
I don't know, I think it would be useful. Also, she's royalty, which is also kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I want to be friends with Lyssa. Yeah. Not movie Lyssa, though.
No.
Which brings up something that I meant to say to you earlier. Why are they all British? They're in fucking Montana. They're not all going to be British. I would expect more of them to be Romanian or Russian or something like that. And that's just where they happen to come to school. Because there's, you know, not many vampire academies all over the place. I'd rather go to Montana than Siberia.
That's true.
But why were they all British in the movie? That was annoying to me.
I don't know. I mean, I can understand in, like, movie world, and Brits tend to have a reputation of being certain characters. You know, if a Brit turns up, like, oh, that's the bad guy.
They're all British this time.
They're all. I don't understand. Except, you know, Rose was clearly American, and yeah, I don't know. I don't get it. It was a choice that they certainly made.
That was the only thing that I didn't really care for in the movie.
Yeah, it just didn't make any sense. With no, I can understand them would be, like you say, the odd Brit, but then I would expect the odd American, because it's, like you say, it's an international school of Moray and Dampier. It's where they all go.
Yeah.
You raise a persuasive argument, though, about being friends with Rose or Lissa, because I would like to be Rose.
Yeah.
Rose is amazing.
Yeah.
If I'm not being Rose, I would like to be friends. I don't know if I would be, actually, because I don't know if I'd be too scared to be friends with Rose. I should be too honest with
her. Yeah, she's pretty intimidating.
To the point of being blunt and potentially, you know, unless you're Lissa, she's going to disregard you.
Yeah.
So you have to be Lissa to be friends with Rose.
Yeah, and I kind of don't like how Rose took it upon herself to get rid of Christian. She doesn't like you. And really, it was just her. For whatever reason, she doesn't like Christian. So she tells Christian that, you know, Lissa doesn't like you and she thinks you're a creepy stalker, so leave her alone. Like, that made me sad.
Yeah, and I'm glad she took a reverse on that and realised she'd done bad in her personal growth. So yeah, I think I'm the same. I'd probably be friends, I would like to be Rose and be friends with Lissa, but be the more mature Rose at the end of the book, the beginning of the book Rose. Because at least then you know you've got a guaranteed friend, but unless you are Lissa, you are not necessarily going to be a priority with Rose at all.
Yeah.
Moving on. Blah, do we have another one?
We do have another one.
Excellent.
Would you rather fight guardians or Psyhounds?
Is this to the death or to the pain?
I would say death.
I'd probably say guardians, because I feel like I would stand a chance. If I'm in this situation, I've been trained to fight. That's the way I see it.
Yeah. You've been trained to fight humans and not dogs.
Yeah.
Not psychic dogs.
Plus, if a Psyhound's going to get the teeth into you, that's pretty it's a big turn in the fight, you know.
Yeah.
So probably guardians. Because, I mean, you know, you take out the Achilles heel of someone or a tendon.
Yeah, probably easier to destroy.
Yeah. Puppies.
Yeah, I don't want to kill a dog.
I like doggies.
Yeah, I don't.
Dog, I would put it on its nose.
Yeah. I'd much rather kill a human than a dog.
Yeah. People suck. Dogs are gorgeous. Okay. Last question. Which element would you rather have control over?
Are we including spirit?
Yes.
Then I think spirit. Because...
why?
Because spirit, they also have a greater control over all the other ones. So if you've got control over spirit, but you can also use the other ones, like, pretty well.
Yeah.
Then I might as well have it all. I need it all.
Yeah. What was if we took spirit out of the equation and only had...
if we took spirit out of the equation, then I would choose fire.
I agree with you on all counts. If you've got spirit, I'll take it. Might as well control everything.
Yeah.
But if I couldn't, then it would be fire.
Yeah. Fire or...
water, possibly. Or I don't like water. Water is a little intimidating for me. But I think if I had control over water, I wouldn't be as intimidated by it.
Yeah. And I suppose, like, I did like the violent use of air.
That was excellent.
That was pretty cool. Earth is on the bottom of my list, no matter what. Earth is on the bottom. You rotted a bench. What else are you going to do with it?
Well, exactly. I think the first book doesn't really explore the elements very well, or at least very much. And I don't think until the answers may change, this might be a question we go back to at another point. I feel like
at book six, when we finish the Vampire Academy, we should just ask all of these questions over again. Maybe not the Guardians and Psyhounds, but all the other questions we should ask them over again.
I think that's a good idea. We'll go in and reassess which questions are potentially, you know, change. Atlas Tree is going to change. Yeah. You know, I might not find Dimitri's quite so hot by book six.
Sorry. Excuse me.
This terrible cough, you really need to get it sorted.
I think it's book two anyway. It's been a while since I read it.
I do know that Dimitri goes a bit, or, you know, attitudes towards Dimitri do change. I do know that much.
Yeah.
But I'm playing the ignorant one here.
Yeah.
And the good cop, bad cop. Edit all of that out.
Yeah. Okay. I have a silly question to ask you. And I'm pretty sure I know the answer. But I love Dimitri so much. And how every time Rose goes into the gym, he's either reading a Western or listening to, like, 80s pop music. And Prince? He's listening to Prince at one point? But which would you rather do? Listen to Prince with Dimitri or read Westerns with Dimitri?
Easy. Listen to Prince with Dimitri, because I would dance around with him like a fool. I would dance like nobody's watching.
Okay.
And, you know, Prince is a power ballad master.
Yeah.
And I'm not really a big fan of Westerns.
So what if it was just listen to music with Dimitri or read books with Dimitri? Would that change your answer?
Books with Dimitri,
would you sexually read them out loud?
It would be pornographic.
Do you act?
But not.
Would you act them out?
It depends what book I'm reading.
Everything. Just read everything sexually.
You're reading Lord of the Rings. Are you going to go for a really long walk? Yes, let's act that one out.
Yes. Okay. Sorry, I just had to know, because I wanted to talk about Dimitri more.
That's fine. Snuggled up, reading books, nice and warm.
Yeah. Shirtless. Snuggled. Shirtless. Yes.
So hot.
Oh, okay. That's the end of Would You Rather.
That needs to end.
It needs to stop. We need to stop. At least, hold on. At least in this case, it's okay for us to lust after this character because he is of age.
Exactly. This is what I was thinking as I was reading the book. So yes, at last somebody that's not cringy.
Yeah.
Anyway,
favorite final thought quote?
Okay, I pull three.
I also have three. We're getting really good at this.
This is scary, but I will say I couldn't really pull any, like, deep, meaningful things. You know, mine are more for fun.
Okay, I feel like mine are a little more serious.
That's all right. I think mine are predominantly Rose as well.
Mm. Okay.
Probably because I like a sassiness.
Yeah.
So, in no particular order, only a true best friend can protect you from your immortal enemies.
Hmm. It's a good one.
I'm really not good with impulse control.
No.
Hashtag.
Bless you, you're not.
Relatable. And the last one. I've saved the best for last. The only thing better than imagining Dimitri carrying me in his arms was imagining him shirtless while carrying me in his arms.
So good. So good.
I could not put that in.
That's a good one. Now I feel silly because all of mine are, like, not silly. But it's okay. People change. We're always changing, right? You aren't the same as you were then. I'm not the same as I was then. People good change. One. Yeah, well, we all have to do things we don't like. That's life.
Oh, hashtag relatable as well.
Yes. And the greatest and most powerful revolutions often start very quietly, hidden in the shadows.
Ooh, I like that one.
Ooh. Foreshadowing.
Ooh.
If you liked this, try this. What do you have?
Okay, right. You've got to go with me here, people.
Okay.
So I know this book isn't out until April, but I've read some reviews. Hell, I've even chatted with the author a little bit on social. I am absolutely buzzing about this book. I've already got my pre-order in. I have admitted to the world I have. And the reason I've picked it is vampires.
Yes.
And sassiness.
Yes.
So this book is not yet out. So I'm recommending it for you to look into, possibly have it as a future read, put it in your 2021 TBR pile. And it is Mina and the Undead by Amy McCaw. It's a debut book. 17-year-old Mina from England arrives in New Orleans to visit her estranged sister, Libby. After growing up in Whitby, the town that inspired Dracula, Mina loves nothing more than a creepy horror movie. She can't wait to explore the city's darkest secrets. Vampire tours, seedy bars, spooky cemeteries, disturbing local myths. And it gets even better when Mina lands a part-time job at a horror movie mansion and meets Jared, Libby's gorgeous housemate, co-worker and a fellow horror enthusiast. But the perfect summer bliss is broken when, while exploring the mansion, Mina stumbles upon the body of a girl with puncture marks on her neck. Clutching a lock of hair that suspiciously resembles Libby's, someone is replicating New Orleans' most brutal supernatural killings. Mina must discover the truth and prove her sister's innocence before she becomes the victim of another myth.
Oh.
It's a murder mystery with vampires.
The book that I picked, conveniently enough, is also
not
out yet.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
I'm getting quite scared by the fact that we're 4,500 miles from each other, but we're getting scarily attuned.
I know, but I love it at the same time. So this one doesn't come out until September. September 7th is when it's expected to be published. And it is called Empire of the Vampire.
Sold. I'll take 2 copies, thank you.
By Jay Kristoff. So get another copy because you need another one. So, the summary from Goodreads. From holy cup comes holy light. The faithful hand sets world aright. And in the 7 martyrs' sight, mere man shall end this endless night. Take that in for a second. 27 years have passed since the last sunrise, and for almost 3 decades, the creatures of the night have walked the day without fear. Once, humanity fought bravely against the cold blood legions, but now we exist only in a few scattered settlements, tiny sparks of light in a growing sea of darkness. Gabriel de Leon is the last of the Silver Saints, a holy order dedicated to defending realm and church, now utterly destroyed. Imprisoned for the murder of the vampiric king, Gabriel is charged with telling the story of his life. His tale spans years, from his youth in the monastery of Saint Michon, to the forbidden love that spelled his undoing, and the betrayal that saw his order annihilated. Most importantly, Gabriel will tell the story of the Grail, the legendary cup prophesied to bring an end to the eternal night, whose location is known to a single person. A smart-mouthed teenage urchin named Dior.
Bloody urchins, man.
Their journey with a band of unlikely allies would see Dior and Gabriel forge an unbreakable bond and set the broken paragon on a road to redemption. But now, the Grail is shattered. And with the cup of the Redeemer destroyed and the last Silver Saint awaiting execution, what can bring an end to this undying empire?
That sounds so good.
Yes, please.
It sounds like quite like a fantasy vampire book as well.
Yeah.
Which is a delightful change.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm excited for it. I really like Jay Kristoff.
Yeah.
Really, really got into Nevernight, which I wasn't expecting to, but yeah. So I'm excited. I'm excited for vampires.
That might have to go on the schedule as well. Because we love vampires.
Yes, we do. All right. Well, that's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda.
I'm Claire.
Join us next time as we discuss One of Us is Next by Karen McManus. Look out for our Would You Rather polls on social media. Don't forget about our book club and monthly challenges on Facebook. Be sure to visit our shop on Redbubble at fictionalhangover.redbubble.com for all your favorite Fictional Hangover-themed merchandise, and become a patron of ours on Patreon at patreon.com/fictionalhangover or support us on Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/fictionalhangover. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
You can find us at fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover, and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. If you'd like this episode, check out our others and rate, review and subscribe so you don't miss out. And finally, special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and Patreon. Thanks for listening.